Sup, fools? This is the QTR Podcast. Welcome. Today is April 16th, 2020. Isn't that special? Today's podcast, like all of my podcasts, is brought to you by my patrons. I'm going to shout out my patrons. I'm going to give you the two rules for the podcast, and then we're going to get started. You know how we get down. First and foremost, I want to shout out my newest patrons over at JM Bullion. People are always asking me where I get my gold, where I get my silver, and JM Bullion is now the spot. I made my first two orders with them over the last 2 days. They shipped out the same day. Haven't gotten the shit yet, so if it turns out it sucks, I'll let you know. But I don't think it will. So far, so good with these guys. And JM Bullion has partnered with me to become my, gold and silver guy. So I've heard a lot of great things about them from my listeners already, and they are offering for you. They had a feeling you guys might like gold and silver as QTR podcast listeners. So they're offering, if you use the promo code QTR5, they're going to give you $5 off any order over $300, plus they're going to give you free shipping. So it's a very low margin business, gold and silver bullion dealing. It doesn't seem like a lot, but the free shipping and the couple bucks, it's worth it if you're going to be ordering from them anyway. And at the end of the day, it won't make a fucking lick of difference when gold goes to 5,000 in the next 5 years, which is likely going to happen. A plus at the Better Business Bureau, $3 billion in sales done by these guys. And they've only been in business for like 10 years. And like I said, they turn my orders around immediately. They ship the same day, which is something that Kitco and other places that I order from don't do. So JM Bullion will be the spot for me. The link to all their stuff is in the podcast description. This podcast is also brought to you by my homeboy Pete Hegedus over at The Trader's Path. The Trader's Path is the only investment community where I can guarantee you you're not going to get dicked over. The rest of them, I don't know. I haven't done any due diligence on, but I know Pete Hegedus personally. He's a fine human being, and he started his trading service because he got tired of the bullshit and the nonsense and the front running and just the general scumbaggery of other day trading services. So check out my man Pete over at the Trader's Path. They trade in red markets, green markets, they trade options and equities. You get a live stream every day, you get a daily watch list of what they're looking at. And while the market is flipping a shit every day now since the coronavirus pandemic has happened, which by the way, we were on top of several months ago, fuck everybody else. Since then, it's a great place to have, honestly, it's a great time to surround yourself with a trading community. It's a great time to bounce your ideas off other people and not go it alone. So if you're looking for a reputable place with an honest person that I put my name behind, and you know how much I fucking hate scumbags, which is why I don't advertise for them, check out my homeboy Pete Hegedus over at The Trader's Path. That's what I would say to you. And follow him on Twitter, at PLHStock. This podcast also brought to you by my homeboy Sang Lucci and the Sang Lucci Steam Room. What makes Sang Lucci different than the rest of the gurus out there? How about today? This is what happened today, real quick. I saw Lucci's live stream 2 days ago where he came on and said he was selling Amazon calls. And then Amazon went up over the last 2 days. And I actually texted my buddy this morning and I said, man, I hope Lucci's not getting hurt on this because I saw in his live stream that he had sold some Amazon calls. And I said, I wonder if he's going to tweet about it. Because Lucci, as you know, has a history and credibility of tweeting about his losers and not just his winners. That's what makes him trustworthy. That's what allows you to have some rapport with him. And sure as shit, if he didn't come out today and put out a tweet about his Amazon position and say, well, you know what happened? I got stopped out. I got blown up. Lucci has integrity. He's also got skills. He helps run the Sang Lucci Steam Room, which is an online chat room that happens in real time and shows you where money is coming into the options market. Well worth the money, can pay for itself in a month, if not weeks, if you use it correctly and you're not a herb, as he would say. And Lucci's an honest guy and a reputable person. He also offers the 3LT playbook, which are the three rules that he used to make himself a millionaire. I know for a fact he's a millionaire. I've seen the bank statements. And he also offers the Sang Lucci Master Course. That's it. How about that for doing it off the top of my head? Which is Lucci's course in finance without all the bullshit and jargon that comes with the normal finance world. So check out my homeboy, Sang Lucci. He'll be on the podcast, I think, next week. This podcast also brought to you by my dear friends over at Rumorhound. Rumorhound has a product that is unlike anything else in the day trading community, in the trading world right now. They have an artificial intelligence-based program that uses an algorithm to try to determine whether or not merger and acquisition rumors that come out, and you see them everywhere on Twitter, on CNBC, all over the place, whether they are worth listening to or avoiding. And there's really nothing like RumorHound out there. It's a beautiful piece of software, it runs on a beautiful interface, and it gives you a very easy to understand, recommendation as to whether or not a rumor is something you should be paying attention to or ignoring. As you know, money can be made and lost in merger and acquisition rumors very easily. So check out my friends over at RumorHound. They're offering a 14-day free trial to podcast listeners. Link to all this stuff is in the podcast description. And follow them for free information at RumorHound on Twitter. Finally, this podcast is brought to you by my friends over at Corvus Gold. My friend Jay Mintzmyer, who is a fantastic shipping analyst. My homeboy Russ Valenti, huge week for you, brother. Not going to say more than that except that sending you a lot of love. Nicholas Parks, Nathan Michaud at Investors Underground and Traders for a Cause. We just raised over $130,000 for COVID-19 relief, which was fucking awesome last weekend. Chris Bead, Ken R., Chris Boas, my homeboy Crichton Titus, Dylan Davis, Ken and Mr. J.K. Cunningham. Finally, some of my newest patrons, and then we're going to get on with the show. People that have donated recently, I want to shout out to my homeboy Mr. Don P., who hit me up on PayPal. Thank you, brother. Bart Courtwright, Mark Twitchell, thank you so much. Bad Daddy Publishing is in the house. Tom and Andrew C. Richardson, Benjamin White, my homeboy Steve M., Arjun Murdy, Tyler Soliday, Sebastian, what's up, buddy? Beers in Montreal very soon. All right, there's two rules to the podcast. First is take two drinks to the face, and the second is this is not investment advice. I'm not an investment advisor. I'm not registered. I'm not licensed, and that is it. Don't listen to anything you hear. And if you agree to that, we can get started. On the line with me today, QTR podcast veteran and all-around Wall Street curmudgeon, Mark Spiegel of Stanfield Capital. How are you today, sir?
I'm very curmudgeonly, to be honest with you.
Well, you know, I say that because you are always you always have curmudgeon-y retorts to my tweets, which I appreciate, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, you know, that's all in good fun. I mean, clearly, you are Nostradamus and no one else saw any of that stuff. So don't think it's not appreciated.
Well, I tell you what, I now automatically assume sarcasm when you write something unless you say otherwise. With most people, it's, you know, you expect them to have a normal tone and then maybe you get an inkling of sarcasm. With you, it's the other way around.
By the way, your response was very funny when, you know, it was very, I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was funny, so.
Oh, well, people were saying that it was low class of me to brag.
Right, and you said you are low class.
Yeah. And like, joke's on you. I never said I wasn't low class. Fools.
Yep, it's hard to, you can't really, you know, no one's going to come back with anything against that one. So.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do? It's like that Eminem song where he's like, what are you going to do against a guy that strangles himself, right?
Yeah, although I don't know the song, but, you know, I'll take your word for it. So. I think the last time we spoke on this show was like in January, right?
Yeah, it was a long time ago. It was definitely before the pandemic, I think. That's a really good question. Let me look. Not that it matters, but now I'm curious because I want to know exactly how far back we got to go. If I was a professional, I'd have this shit prepared in advance.
I think it was January.
Yeah, January 23rd.
Yeah, so we were probably talking about, because you and I were on the same page, how, you know, we saw those horrible videos from Wuhan, and we were both like, you know, what the fuck? This is on the way here, and nobody's doing anything.
Right.
So, so now, of course, it is here, and you know, I'm really in the epicenter of it here in New York. And what are you doing? Are you sort of camping out? And you live in a house or an apartment there?
I live in a house. I'm out in like a rural area outside of the city now. So I'm not in like downtown Philadelphia, which is fantastic. I mean, it sucks, but I'm a very short train ride away. But I'm out in like a little bit more of a rural area. So I'm just laying low, man. I was prepared in January for this and have been posting up ever since. I mean, really, my main priority was getting my parents prepared and a couple other people that are very close to me, trying to kind of shake them out of their fucking cloud that they were in January and get them prepared. And They're all healthy and happy and safe, and so am I, so that's great.
So are you there living with people, or are you on your own?
No, I live by myself.
Yeah, so, I mean, don't you go a little stir-crazy sort of in some rural area for, like, you know, 2 months of this or whatever? You're supposed to stay in the house?
Not really, to be honest with you, because mostly, it's not a huge difference for me regardless. I mean, I traveled a little bit, which I enjoyed doing, and I would go into New York occasionally to see people that I work with, and, I liked traveling. I like going to Montreal and different places. I've put that on hold. It's not too different for me. I mean, I'm pretty much at the computer from like 6 to 6 every day anyways. And then the only big difference for me was stopping jiu-jitsu, which was I was at the gym probably 5 or 6 days a week for 2 to 3 hours at a clip. So I had to change my exercise schedule, and now I'm just biking and running.
Yeah, that's big for you, actually. I know that, yeah. I haven't minded it too much here. I mean, you know, we're in an apartment, you know, in Manhattan, and, you know, there's big windows, so I have great light here and decent views, but I've been watching, like, these great, I'm like, hooked on Amazon Prime has been dealing me these great Korean movies. Korea has an amazing film industry, not just the one, which I haven't seen yet, that won Best Picture, but gangster pictures and horror pictures and all kinds of stuff. But even I'm going to go a little stir crazy when I just saw that Cuomo wants us to stay for another month at least, you know, in lockdown mode. You know, I mean, I get out to walk the dog around the block every day, but that's about it. So
yeah, there's a porn joke there that I didn't make just because I respect you. I want you to know that.
What is
I'm surprised you didn't make it. That's usually your territory.
Yeah, what was the joke? Do you want to make it?
No, you said there's a lot of great Korean films out there. I mean, I felt like saying, yeah, I know.
I mean, do they do like the Japanese and like blur out all the good parts? I've never seen a Korean porn thing.
Let's get off this for a second.
All right. But anyway, yeah, so it's just a crazy situation here. I mean, look, I can't.
Have you left the house at all?
What's that?
Have you left your apartment at all?
I've only left literally like to walk the dog around the block. You know, I mean, my car has been sitting in the garage for a couple of months, or, you know, I haven't driven it, you know, and it's like, God knows if that thing will even start. And it's just like, you know, normally I don't mind this. You know, I used to mind when I lived before, we didn't have really great light and decent views. And I would go stir crazy and I would just sort of take the laptop to Starbucks, you know, and just to get the hell out of the apartment. But here I don't mind any of that. But still, I mean, on a weekend, I mean, I like going to the museums. I like doing whatever, and obviously none of that's happening. So look, it is what it is. I mean, you know, thank God we're healthy, right? I mean,
exactly.
It's not exactly a lot to complain about versus being those terrific medical people working in ERs in this town, which has just been, you know, like horror shows. So
yeah, I had a similar routine as you. I have two spots that I would go to. I would take the laptop if I felt like not working from home. And I would go, I usually get lunch at the same spot, and then I would go to a coffee shop after a lot. And I haven't been able to do that. So that, you know, that kind of stinks. But, you know, like you said, small price to pay. You could probably take the – are you allowed to drive at all in Manhattan now?
I could. I mean, I think, yeah. I mean, I could go on a weekend and just start it up and you know, run it around the, you know, down the FDR Drive or whatever. I mean, there's not going to be any traffic. Maybe I'll do that just to get the, you know, just to get the fluids going through that thing.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. You got a Porsche, right?
Yeah. It's a Boxster, and you know, it should get exercised once a month anyway, you know, and it hasn't been now for like 2 months. So
yeah,
I probably
make your way over to the Jersey Turnpike and, clean the phlegm out of it and then just drive it back home and park it.
Yeah, exactly. So speaking of horror shows, man, this market is just insane, right? I mean, you and I are on the same page, and probably everyone listening to this podcast is on that page. But, you know, it's like I was talking about this on Twitter today. You know, it's obviously a rigged market, right? I mean, it's rigged when the Fed buys everything that's not nailed down. And, you know, so, you know, I had an okay year going. And you know, but now, like this month, we were up like 3% as of Friday. And now we're down, I don't know, probably 4% this month. Because, you know, I'm long this sort of deep value microcap stuff. And I'm short the Qs against that almost dollar for dollar. And obviously, that's not an exact hedge. I was looking for some sort of alpha there because I figure, okay, the Qs are the one thing that haven't gotten slammed in this bear market. I think they're green on the year now. And, you know, before this thing is over, they're gonna get slammed. And of course, people are just buying, you know, a combination of bubble stocks and garbage stocks. And
the microcaps aren't even getting a bid.
Yeah, and I think Zero Hedge had a thing today that, and thank God we're not, but it said, like, you know, microcaps are down 30% this year while the NASDAQ is up. I don't know what index they were looking at. Maybe it was microcap value. But, you know, so it's been frustrating. But what I said on Twitter was, you know, look, this is not a religious thing for me. If I thought I could make money on that stuff, I would. But, you know, the problem with betting on a rigged market when you're in a depression, which we are, and this is going to last a long time, is that you can't be sure that the rigging is going to work.
Right.
So it's kind of a strange situation. But, I mean, make no mistake about it. This is not going to be a V, and it's not going to be a U. And, you know, it's going to be maybe a little bit of a W with very small up moves because, you know, I just saw this thing before we started talking. You know, Trump's talking about his phase 1, 2, 3. You know, if you take half or two-thirds out of capacity out of every public place in order to enforce social distancing, I mean, that's millions of jobs gone. And in fact, those places all got out of business. I mean, you can't run a restaurant, you know, that has small margins to begin with and remove two-thirds of your tables, right? I mean, so, and you look at how many jobs are in the service industry, and then, you know, the ramifications for that this market is just not thinking about. I mean, you know, if you lose your job as a waiter or a restaurant manager or a store person or whatever, you're not going to buy the next iPhone, right? You're not going to pay your Netflix bill, maybe, right? So, you know, it's not just like the eating and drinking and cruise establishments that get killed here. There are so many jobs in these things that, but, you know, stocks are going up. It's crazy. I mean, I'll tell you who has nailed the move so far is Harris Kupperman. You know, he's on Twitter as Cuppy, or he has his blog. I mean, he said, just go long, 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 because basically they're turning our stock market into Zimbabwe, you know, where, of course, you know, nominal prices soared, even though real prices didn't, but we're not getting the inflation yet. I mean, eventually, you and I had this back and forth maybe last week. Eventually, we will get the inflation. I have no doubt, and I own some gold, you know, the way you do. But that could take years, or it could take decades, or it could take weeks. You just don't know. But so far, we're not seeing it. I mean, the market soared today, and the yield on the 30-year Treasury is down to 1.2%. You know, I mean, TLT, which is basically a bet on that bond, was up over 1% today, with NASDAQ up 1.8%. I mean, the whole thing is just insane. So, you know, it's hard to...
And a good way to think about it is the stock market is the Fed's only mandate. And I think if the best way to think about it is they're going to do everything that they can do to get the numbers where they want them on the stock market, whether it's real, whether it's nominal, whether it's this, whether it's that. They want that Dow Jones fucking number on CNBC, on CNN, on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, on MSN Money. They want that number fucking holding steady, if not going up. They don't want that thing fucking whipsawing around 9%, 10% on a day. And whatever they need to do that, whether it's buying junk bond ETFs or whatever, they need to do, whatever moral hazard they need to create, they're going to do it.
Well, you know, so obviously the Fed does look at the stock market. But right now, the Fed hasn't been focusing on the stock market. It's really been focusing, I think, on the debt markets. And, you know, so obviously they're buying the junk bonds. Or I think, to be exact, they were buying, you know, fallen angel bonds. Bonds that were, you know, recently downgraded to junk or maybe would have been in those ETFs or, I don't know, directly, whoever the hell are doing it. But, you know, debt is not equity, right? And if these companies are going to have really bad business for the next 2 years, which they easily could, I mean, until there's a vaccine for this thing. I mean, I was shocked. I saw on the other day, ESPN did this survey where like 60% of hardcore sports fans said they won't be attending any games until there's a vaccine for, you know, for COVID-19, you know? So, you know, what does that mean for restaurants, you know, theaters, nightclubs, cruises, you know, going to the office? you know, where they eliminate half the jobs or have half the people work from home or, you know, whatever. I don't know. But I mean, the thing is, this is going to last a long time. Right. And so even if the Fed backs up some of this debt, that doesn't make the equity in these companies worth very much necessarily, you know?
Yes, I do know. And I am baffled by what the Fed thinks that they're going to do here over the course of the next 6 months, as, you know, this is a very simple situation where the Fed has papered over everything that's gone wrong to give the impression that nothing's going wrong. Yet the indicators of actual macroeconomic data, like the unemployment numbers, I mean, are telling us that there's a major problem. Like you're saying, the problem isn't going to get better either until there's a vaccine. If you can keep 65% of fucking sports nuts out of a sports stadium, that's saying something. Because, you know, sports fans...
By the way, once there's a vaccine, which, you know, 18 months from now, I mean, some people are saying, oh, maybe we can do it 12 months from now. But the people who know this say it would almost be a miracle if you had one tested, you know, in 18 months, right? Once there's that, you got another couple of years of horrible economy after that, because think of all the places that went out of business, right? Oh, so now there's a vaccine, takes a few months, if you're lucky, for everyone to get it, and now a guy thinks about starting a small business or a restaurant or whatever and hiring people, right? And that takes, for that to get back up to speed, can take another couple of years. I mean, this could seriously be the beginning of, like, a five-year depression, right? Where the first 2 years are depression and then recession, right? I mean, this could go on. So, you know, it's crazy. I just saw this thing that just hit while we're talking here. Bostic says U.S. small businesses may need up to $500 billion monthly in support for this crisis. Fucking $500 billion a month. So you see that, and basically there's a tug of war here between a horrible depression and a huge amount of money printing. And the only question is, how much of what the Fed is printing is essentially just filling a giant sinkhole, right? Versus how much of it is going to inflate asset prices beyond what they're worth. And right now, you know, right now these stocks are moving on emotion and people are like, oh, the Fed's there, blah, blah, blah. But I don't think anybody, I mean, the consensus on Wall Street that I saw in some survey yesterday was most people expect a what they call a U-shaped, you know, thing, which is, you know, gradual improvement and then it really soars, right? Like nobody's expecting an L, okay? But it's not going to really soar. I mean, too much damage has been done and it's too far away for a vaccine for this thing. So, you know, I'm not covering our short hedge, you know, but it's not easy when you see, I mean, I have to admit, the NASDAQ chart is as short-term overextended as it is, it looks strong. I mean, you look at that QQQ, it looks like it wants to go more, you know? So, you know, we're offset it with longs, but as I said, you know, like the NASDAQ was up almost 2% today, and, you know, one of our longs is up 1.5%, another one 1.3%, one of them was down 5% on no volume. I mean, so that's kind of what I'm dealing with here, you know? And of course, we're still short Tesla, which is up like 40% this month. So, you know, it's a much smaller part of our book than it was back in the old, you know, days. But, you know, it's definitely hurting us. I mean, you can't be short anything in something meaningful and have it go up 40% against you and not have it hurt. And I mean, who the fuck is buying that? I'm looking at it now. It's up $10 after hours again.
Yeah, why not, right?
Is this retail investors in China? Is it, you know, government investors in China? I mean, you're looking at this thing, even Adam Jonas, who's actually one of the smarter sell side whores on Wall Street, you know, in his note the other day, one of his bullet points was, I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, we have no idea who the hell is buying this thing. We ask around, nobody knows, and yet it's traded almost 20 million shares today. And it's a $750 stock. I mean, that's $15 billion worth of stock in one fucking day, right? So it's crazy. You know, people say, well, you know, Musk is manipulating it offshore so he can get his bonus, you know, because the market cap is there. Maybe. I don't know. Who the hell knows? I certainly wouldn't. If he thought he could get away with it and he had the money, I have zero doubt he could do it. But I don't know if he thinks he could get away with it or if he has the cash, but it's just, it's a crazy stock. I mean, there's nothing improving here in the fundamentals. I mean, you know, the
fundamentals, the fucking factory shut down.
Well, yeah, but even longer term, even if you pretend that's not going on, the only way they're increasing volume at all is by cutting prices, you know, same territory sales. You know, last quarter was sequentially down, I don't know, like 20% versus Q4. It was up year over year, but they were in new territories that they weren't in before, and with big price cuts in Europe and in China. And it's you know, it's like there's nothing really more to talk about with that stock. I mean, Musk is a pathological liar, but there's complete regulators don't care. Maybe at this point, regulators are like, well, everyone knows he's a liar, and at this point, you know, it's cave canem, right?
Buyer beware.
Buyer beware, you know, and when it all collapses, we'll come clean it up and send his lying ass to jail. But, you know, and obviously the guy contributes to a lot of campaigns, spends a lot of money on lobbying. He, you know, he buys all the right people, not literally bribing them, but, you know, campaign contributions, whatever. And he gets away with shit, you know. And so, you know, I don't know. The thing that's remarkable to me is it's one thing if you fool a bunch of retards on Robinhood, but whoever he's fooling, oh, is that politically incorrect? I'm sorry.
I didn't say anything.
Whoever he's fooling is, you know, I'm speaking, you know, as a group, you know, bought, you know, traded 20 million shares today and at $750 and drove the stock up $15. I mean, that's really big money that's somehow involved with this, even if it's just, you know, quant funds swapping it back and forth. And
it's billions,
it up.
It's billions of dollars of stock.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. And that's why, you know, Jonas was puzzled too. No one, I now know a lot of people on Wall Street. I met a lot of people, you know, over the years I've been doing this, and no one has ever seen anything like this, and no one has any explanation for it. And, you know, one day we'll learn what it is, you know, but right now it's, you know, it's certainly hurt us this month, but it's not hurting us crazy because it's just a smaller position. And a lot of what I'm following here is just out of sort of intellectual fascination and disgust. So,
well, I got to tell you, the stock movement is definitely peculiar to me. I mean, I sit here and I watch the market every day, and I've done that for the last decade now, pretty much. And I don't know, man, you just notice things. It's like Gilead today is a perfect example. Like, Gilead caught a lot of steam today. It was going, there were calls going off, you know, and then so after the bell, you see Gilead release good remdesivir data. I'm like, okay, am I fucking surprised? No, you know, sometimes you just notice things.
With Tesla,
one of the things that I notice is before it makes these stratospheric launches, there's usually some big call blocks that go off. And there was one a couple of days ago. I don't know where the stock was. Maybe it was in the 600s or whatever, the high 500s or the low 600s. And then, you know, it was just three straight days of just fucking steam in the equity. $75, $50 days. And you're just like, holy shit, man. You think about, you know, going back to when the stock was $170, which wasn't that long ago. It was like 2 years ago. And you're thinking, man, that would be a 50% swing up or down. What, you know, what's changed in the company's financials and the fundamentals since then? Nothing, you know, except you got maybe a good headline out of China a couple days ago. Said they, oh, they registered a certain amount of cars there.
Well, I'll tell you what's
changed. Maybe he's getting in good with the Chinese government, Mark.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what's changed in the fundamentals is there isn't a growth story here anymore in terms of revenue. I mean, you know, yes, this quarter had growth in revenue because they were in new territories that they weren't in before. But, I mean, the second half of – and we talked about this, I think, in January. The second half of 19, revenue was down versus the second half of 18. So, yeah, I don't know what's going on here. I've sort of given up even trying to figure it out anymore. You know, all I know is this. Musk is a complete and total scumbag, and people like that always get what they deserve in the end. You know why? Because along the way, they piss off and burn – too many bridges. They piss off and burn too many people, and at the end they turn on him and he winds up in jail.
Did you see Russ Mitchell's tweet today from the LA Times?
I did.
Russ Mitchell, for the listeners, tweeted out today that He heard, I guess he was investigating Musk's donation of ventilators, which actually weren't ventilators. They were, you know, BiPAP machines. And he heard...
5-year-old BiPAP machines. Right. Which he undoubtedly, quote unquote, got a deal.
He heard from sources that the donation, Musk is such a humanitarian that the donation of these non-ventilators to where they were going was... contingent upon the people that receiving them had to take a photo of themselves and put it on social media. So he couldn't just make the donation and just say, here you go. You know, it's nice that less people are dying. He had to make it contingent upon those people having to publicly thank him.
The stupidest thing about it is it was a donation of something that's readily available and sells for maybe $800 each, and no hospital was crying out for it. I mean, yeah, sure, they'll take it. What the fuck? It's probably sitting in a warehouse somewhere for them. But so that's the picture he's putting out there. It just makes him look even more like a moron when you promise ventilators and they're, you know, it's a five-year-old design. They might have been new in a warehouse somewhere, but, you know, they don't even make that model anymore, that company. You know, so it's like the whole thing is just, you know, whatever. I really don't know. I don't know how he gets away with this crap from regulators. I mean, not that. That's not a regulatory issue. But I also don't know how institutional investors could own a stock run by a guy like this. I mean, I know on the new deals.
Bailey Gifford's the top stockholder in Tal Education. I mean, what do you, you know what I mean? We were, when that company disclosed that they had committed fraud or overstated their metrics last week, My friend Nathan Anderson at Hindenburg Research tweeted out the top 10 shareholders of Tal Education, and the first person on the list was Bailey Gifford.
It's was like, Ark in there too? Because that's, you know, they're usually in the same garbage.
Yeah, I don't know. I never met a pile of dung they didn't like, huh?
Boy, you know, Gilead is, by the way, is it a hard G or a soft G? Is it Gilead or Gilead?
I say Gilead, but who gives a fuck?
Well, I don't know. I used to say Gilead, and someone made fun of me and says it's Gilead. I don't know. Whatever one it is. So it's trading now at $84 off a close of $76 after hours. It's just way the fuck up. The thing is, I don't know that they're going to make any money off of that.
No, they're not. This is a hype trade.
Yeah, because they've sort of said that they're gonna basically give it away at cost, right? And, you know... And hopefully there'll be a vaccine for this thing in 18 months. So it's not going to have a long life of demand. And so, and it's a huge company. This would be a very small part of their business. So this is like a day trading special.
It's a feel good trade.
I don't know. I mean,
it's a hype trade. People that aren't interested in the financials and people thinking that whoever finds the vaccine or the therapeutic for this is going to make themselves billionaires. And while they will likely be held in high regard by the people of the United States, as we know. Hey, Gilead came out and they developed the cure for hepatitis C, and Wall Street thanked them by tanking their fucking stock because it wasn't generating recurring revenue after they cured somebody, you know? So
right. That's a great point, and that was a miracle drug. And not only that, but, you know, all the libtards out there who hate pharma were like giving them all kinds of shit for what they were charging for it. And you're like, excuse me, before this, you know, your liver would degenerate, you'd get cancer and you'd die, right? So, you know, whatever. I mean, you charge whatever you want for something like that. But you're right, they got punished for it. And here's the same situation. So, you know, meanwhile, the NASDAQ is trading up another, I don't know, 1.5% here after hours on what? On Trump's three-phase plan, which is basically... You know, nothing new except it guarantees a recession for years and years. I mean, the whole thing is like, anyway.
Yeah, I have no clue. That press conference is at 6. I was thinking if we got
done, I don't watch press conferences listen. Anymore.
I do.
Do you really? I
mean, oh, they're funny.
He can be deliberately funny. I mean, I recognize that. I'm not Trump deranged, but he's just been such a douchebag the way he handled this thing. I mean, I'm putting aside the fact that when you and I were talking about this in January, you know, it was probably a month after that when he said, oh, we have, you know, 15 cases soon to be zero, right? When did he say that? It was probably
that was, I think, beginning of February.
I bet it was.
I said that press conference would cost him the election. That's a Periscope I did that night. I said, that's going to cost me election because what's going to happen is Democrats are going to play that fucking clip back. We got 15 cases and it's going to zero. And what I said was he's not going to be able to stop the fact that the data is going to prove him wrong to the nth degree on this, you know. But yeah. I don't think he's done a fantastic job. I think he's doing, you know, an adequate job, I guess. But I watch for just the tiny little tidbits like yesterday when the guy stood up and was like, excuse me, sir, I have two questions. And Trump's like, one question. And the guy's like, yeah, but one is for a guy that couldn't be here. And Trump's like, who cares? Who cares? If he couldn't be here, whose problem is that? That's his problem, not yours. One question, you know? Because in between the fucking idiocy and the nonsense and the slow response and the limited understanding of science and the virus itself, he's just... I mean, he just says whatever the fuck he wants, and I know that that makes him repulsive and repugnant to some people, and he says some nasty shit, but sometimes, man, I just laugh. It's just to see somebody say shit like that to the media once in a while.
Well, to me, that's funny. I miss that because I'm not watching him anymore. But, you know, what I think he can be funny, but what I despise about him is the way he rewrites very recent history. I mean, I did the last press conference I could stomach was when he said, oh, I know this. I knew this was a pandemic right from the beginning.
Right.
this was like 3 weeks after, you know, after 15, soon to be zero. And I think it was at that same press conference when he was like, I'm paraphrasing, but he was like, I didn't really want to let those American citizens on that cruise ship here because it would make my numbers look bad. But what the hell, I have to do it. You know? So, yeah, look, at this point, he's probably doing everything that should be done. He is actually deferring to the doctors. I don't think anybody could handle this right now any differently than he is. And actually, for the last few weeks, he's handled it right. But he's still such a douchebag when he gets up there. It's like he does sort of make the right decision, but he says such stupid stuff en route to getting to the right decision.
Yeah, and sometimes the way he gets there, it's like, hey, two perfect examples. The first is his attitude towards China, which ultimately his end attitude towards China, which is, hey, I want to play fucking hardball with these guys because they're very shrewd business people. I was like, that's great. It's nice that somebody recognizes that. You know, I know China, they're absolutely like way smarter than us when it comes to business and taking advantage of us. We know that they're shrewd business people. We know that their standards for, you know, what's okay in business are very different than in the U.S. So I was like, all right, good. How he arrived at that conclusion, I don't know. Maybe he's just been repeating that to himself in his head for the last 20 years. He read it on Time magazine and it stuck with him. I don't know. But he got there, which I was like, okay with. The other thing is this going after the World Health Organization, which, you know, he said, look, we're going to withhold funding. I don't know how he reached that conclusion. Maybe he just wanted a scapegoat, somebody to blame for fucking up the first month of this. But I don't really care because he's right. We do need to fucking withhold money from the World Health Organization because their response was absolutely fucking insane.
Well, correct. But this is not the right, probably, look, I'm no expert here, but I think this is probably not the right time to withhold the funding because you don't want this thing to start spreading where it isn't so bad. It starts spreading in Africa and getting worse in South America and all that shit. So, you know, he should basically be putting them on notice that once we clear this up, we're going to pull our funding or you're going to fire all these fuckers who were there. And in fact, I want you to fire these three people right now. I mean, that's kind of what he should be doing, you know. But and look, I mean.
I think that's the gist of what he said. I don't think he's he wants the money. He's not trying to claw back the money they've already given them.
But I thought he was going to cut off funding immediately. I don't know, maybe not. But if he was, he shouldn't do that. But he should just put him on notice, rightfully so, which he has, you know.
But look, they didn't do anything, though. All they did was hold everything back. That first press conference
they
did in January, the first press conference they did in January, I watched the entire thing. I live tweeted the whole thing. That guy got up there and kissed China's ass the entire press conference.
Yeah.
All he did was, I think he thanked China six times, and he mentioned the words international health emergency twice. It was embarrassing. And just think about it, Mark. In January, we didn't really even have an idea of how bad this was going to get or how bad it was already. You know, I was going based on what I saw on social media and just based on common sense. And even at that point, without it being a total fucking pandemic disaster yet, I was watching their response saying, wow, they're dragging their feet. They're taking way too long. They're saying all the wrong things. They're advising against travel bans. They advised against a travel ban.
Yeah, look, I mean
that's getting it dead wrong. It would have been better if they said nothing, Mark.
Yeah, this guy had a reputation already. You can dig up the article in the Times of covering up pandemics in the past. I think like in Africa and a couple of countries. He's a bad news guy, and yeah, they kiss China's ass. And
he's also not a doctor, is he?
I don't know about that, but there's a famous virologist. I think he's Canadian. I forget his name, but they had a long portrait of him in the New York Times also. Who there was a video clip of him recently when the broadcaster from some Asian broadcaster, the woman asked him, well, what about Taiwan? And remember, he just pretended he didn't hear the question.
Oh, yeah.
And then he cut off the call. So, I mean, that's unacceptable. That's just bullshit. So, look, you know, whatever. That'll get sorted out eventually. So,
well, the idea that China thinks that they can do this and kind of have this influence where they keep this narrative and that people are just going to buy it. I mean, first off, I understand it kind of because we have dumbass politicians in this country that want to buy it. You know, you got a bunch of people on the left that just take China at their word. You know, they think that to call out China for being a propaganda machine is the same thing as insulting Chinese citizens, which it is not. They're unable to discern the difference there, so they feel emotional about it, and it hurts their feelings. You know, we don't want to hurt China's feelings. Like, Xi Jinping gives a fuck about anybody's feelings here, right? So you have that problem. When I think about what comes out of China in terms of optics, I really, in my mind, I just think North Korea. I think the propaganda machine works the same way. The difference is, in North Korea, it's blatantly obvious. You can see it when you watch documentaries on North Korea, and it, you know, they're 30 or 40 years behind us technology-wise, so it's kind of funny, you know? I mean, it's not funny. It's a human rights crisis, but it makes an impact. In China, they appear more developed. They get shit done, admittedly, like Bill Maher said on a show last weekend. You know, they built a 57-story building in 19 days, so they can put the pedal to the fucking metal what they want, but I mean...
Yeah, have fun hanging out on the 56th floor of that thing.
Mm-hmm.
The next windy day.
Yeah, not anyway. Interested in that.
Yeah.
But
no, but so at any rate, look, it is what it is. I just think we have to look forward at this point. Look, obviously, I mean, look, so they're saying now that this escaped from a Chinese lab, but it was something they were, if that happened, obviously it was something that they were studying. This wasn't any kind of a weapon.
Right.
I mean, people say this is a weapon. I say, really? So if you're going to design a weapon, why would you design a weapon with only a 1% mortality rate that only kills old people and fat people and cancer patients, right, for the most part, right? So it's clearly not – but anyway, so it's not the worst thing. It's not like this was a weapon. It was an accident, and accidents happen. But, you know, their behavior and covering it up and all that, obviously that cost a lot of lives. First, it cost a lot of Chinese lives. But here's the thing, man. They covered this up for whatever they did, weeks or a month or whatever – and that's how this thing got so out of control in Wuhan, to where, as you remember, they had to weld people into their apartments, and it was just a horror show, and I feel terrible for those citizens of Wuhan. But while all that was going on, fucking Trump and Cuomo and de Blasio, they had a two-month head start. We didn't have our first coronavirus, COVID-19 death in New York until March 15th, and you and I on
the
January...
The first death that we knew about.
Well, whatever. But you and I on January...
Well, not whatever. They're different. They're totally different things if you're trying to make this point.
Okay. But you and I on January 15th... Well, here you don't know my point yet. You and I on January 15th are watching this horror show in Wuhan. If I'm Trump, maybe he's not watching that because he's too busy, you know, watching Fox News so he can complain about it. But, you know, he's obviously got medical people, whatever, and they should grab him by the lapel. And Cuomo has a surgeon general. And,
right.
And even de Blasio has a fucking – New York City has the equivalent of a surgeon general, chief medical, whatever. They should have grabbed him and say, guys, this is coming here. We have to order, you know, 10 million masks right now. We have to order 10,000 ventilators right the fuck now.
Right?
So I'm not saying that they should have shut down – you know, the state or the country, on then, because first of all, that would have been impossible to do politically, right? How do you convince America to shut everything down when something's happening way over there? But they should have been prepared for it, and they weren't, and it was a total fuck up at every level of government, and it cost a lot of lives, you know?
Yeah, and nobody wanted to listen, you know? Nobody wanted to listen. I wrote an article February 22nd basically saying, we need to get our ass in gear now doing exactly what... It's already too late, essentially, you know? The same thing you're saying. You know,
but in January, I mean, we have people whose whole job is to do this stuff, right?
Right.
And their whole job is to grab Trump by the fucking lapel
and say, pay attention.
And say, pay attention, dude. We got to order these masks. And if he says no, then their job is to fucking leak it to the press. Right.
And
I'm serious, because it's about life saving. And to call every governor and say, listen, Trump's not doing anything, but you better get masks and ventilators into your state right here, which is, you know, Trump was saying that the governor should have been doing this shit anyway. And like nobody did anything. They all felt, I mean, you know, here in New York, you know, since January, I think I've had a tweet deck column set up just for the word, you know, coronavirus and COVID-19. And, you know, our local politicians, as late as beginning of March, were tweeting, you know, if you're not old, you don't have to worry about this. Ride the subway. Go patronize our wonderful restaurants. Yeah. Go to the theater. And I'm tweeting back at these idiots, specifically de Blasio and this guy Corey something, who's the city council head, another moron. I'm tweeting back. I'm like, you idiots. This is coming here. You got to get ventilators. You got to set up. And, you know, nobody gave a shit. I mean, they were just too busy virtue signaling.
Or it was there already in January.
It wasn't there like this. This was my point I was making.
How are we going to know that?
But you're missing my point. My point is the first death wasn't until March 15th, right? So we don't know how long it was here before that, but we know damn well that if we had 10 million masks here as of March 15th, right, and 10,000 ventilators, then we would not have lost as many people as we did. Look at how many cops and MTA people and nurses and some doctors we lost in New York because they didn't have N95 masks to wear, right? I mean, and it's the those terrible deaths of, you know, brave people. Some of them, the MTA guys, were just going to work every day, and some of them, the cops to some extent and the doctors to a large extent, knew they were putting themselves in harm's way in terms of this disease every day. And our politicians let them down, you know?
My point is, you know, you keep saying March 15th was the first death, and I don't think March 15 was the first death. I think March 15 was the first death that we know about.
No, but my point is...
I know that's not your point. I know your point is that we were late on getting the equipment and the supplies, and we could have acted a lot sooner, and I agree with you 100% on that.
My point is that whenever the death started, you know, we would have been better prepared, and we would have saved a lot of lives, you know, for when it happened, right? So I'm just looking here. I'm pretty sure it was March 15th. Here. New York confirms state's first death from coronavirus. It was March 14th. That's when an 82-year-old woman in New York. That's the one Cuomo. That was March 14th. These guys had 2 full months to have loaded up on whatever they needed,
right,
so that deaths started coming more and more. We'd be prepared for them, and we could have saved a lot of lives. Not necessarily the victims, if you didn't have the city shut down, but just innocent people who got this thing because they didn't have protective equipment, you know?
I agree with you.
I mean, all the government telling you, oh, don't wear a mask, it's not going to do anything, because they were trying to save masks for doctors. They were lying to us. It becomes increasingly obvious that the number one way this thing spreads is by breathing exhaled air from somebody who has it, right, in a close conversation. You know, you get one little puff, maybe that's not enough viral load to do it, but you sit there and talk to somebody back and forth at close quarters, that's how people get this thing, you know? I mean, the red light that set this off for me was that story about the choir in Washington, where they were well aware of coronavirus, they were all washing their hands, no one was coughing, and like, they all got this, or most of them got it, and they got it from just breathing on each other, you know, and whatever, you know. So my advice to anybody now is don't listen to the bullshit about, oh, you can only get this from touching your face or if they sneeze on you. That you can get this from somebody breathing on you. So, you know, once they're available, which they should be soon, get an N95. And in the meantime, you know, every time you're in a room with somebody, have a window open and maybe two windows to get a cross breeze. And that way it'll sort of dissipate whatever they're exhaling and you won't get sick from it.
Or so. If the breeze is moving in the wrong direction, it will accelerate their aerosolization towards your face.
Well, just
so
but
make
just,
sure you
but,
consider
but, you know,
that.
But just the mixture of having more outside air in will essentially dilute it. But yeah, you know.
The point you're making, which is a good point, is you have to fucking think for yourself on this one. And this was a perfect instance where the people like yourself who were thinking about this critically from the beginning, guys like Ben Hunt, Keith McCullough, Chris Martinson, all these guys that were out there from the beginning saying, you know, even I said, hey, if 5% of these videos on Twitter coming out of Wuhan are real, there's a major fucking problem. People say, oh, you can't trust fake, you're trusting fake stuff on social media. I said, no, I don't even need to trust 100% of it, okay? I'm watching a guy fill a fucking tunnel right now with dirt. That's the only thing I need to know. You know, I don't need to know much
exactly.
more than that. That's just not something you don't see. 10 years, 15 years I've been watching Twitter nonstop. I've never seen a picture of a guy filling a fucking tunnel top to bottom with dirt for no reason. That's the only thing I need to know. You're going to tell me in a country of 1.3 billion people that there's only 80,000 infections? Give me a fucking break. The point of the matter here is, I know you're trying to say something. Give me 1 second. The point of the matter here is you had to think for yourself from the beginning on this one. The World Health Organization got it wrong from day one, okay? They were fucking carrying China's narrative for day one. So everybody from day one, all these people that signed on and said, oh, and the social media companies too, well, we're not going to carry a message that's not the official World Health Organization message. Well, guess what? Dead fucking wrong. So you guys were protecting the wrong message at that point now, okay? You were defending the wrong message now. And then as we start to learn these truths and things unfold, days turn into weeks, turn into months, all of a sudden, now again, what did we see yesterday? Fox News reports, well, may have come out of a lab. Now, let's talk about that for a second. I think you made a very good point, which is that doesn't mean it's a nefarious bioweapon, right? The problem was when I posted that article yesterday on Fox News, I had 1 million idiots that didn't read the article writing underneath me like, oh, do you really think it's a bioweapon? It's like, motherfucker, read the article. What did the article say? It said they were working on bats at the fucking Institute of Virology, okay, and that, like you said, this could have been an accident that could have got out. What does that mean? It means we were lied to. If this is true, it means we were lied to about it coming out of a fucking seafood market, all right? And it means that all the people 2 months ago that said, isn't it an interesting coincidence that there is a level 4 biolab, Institute of Virology, hop, skip, and a jump from where this thing originated. Isn't that an interesting coincidence? Like the Gilead calls today, right? Like the Boeing calls. Boeing just announced they restarted production 5 minutes ago. And there were Boeing calls. Interesting fucking coincidence, right? Go ahead, Mark.
I don't disagree with anything you just said. But on the point on the social media, I mean, you know, and I'm just going to reinforce what you said. I mean, you know, you and I aren't doctors, right? I mean, I think I got a B- in AP bio in like 11th grade or something, right? But all you need to see are videos, as you said, of bodies stacking up and people getting welded into their apartments and screaming and dropping on the street. And you know that this is bad. And you know, if you read that like 6 million people had supposedly left Wuhan to go around the world before the city got locked down.
Right.
And even, I think it was Scott Gottlieb, I think it was him who said on Twitter, hey guys, this is happening, what you see in Wuhan, there's a really good chance this is going to be in the U.S. in 8 to 10 weeks. And I think it was him, and he nailed it exactly fucking right, and everybody fell down on the job. So, this, you know, and again, I'm not saying that fewer people would have got it because we would have had more PPE, protective equipment. By the way, while you and I were talking about this all over Twitter, and fortunately I hedged I hedged our fund here in late January with a big short, which saved us in February and March. You know, no doctors were talking about it. You know, I mean, my longtime girlfriend is an obstetrician, and I was haranguing her about this. Is actually kind of funny in a way. It's not really funny, but it is. I was haranguing her about this every damn day in January and February, and she was like, oh, I mean, she was getting information from me, and none of the other doctors there in the hospital were even thinking about this, except the doctors who were married to finance guys. Because all they would talk about was how their husbands in finance were screaming about this, and it's going to be here, and it's going to crash stocks. And like, just there were multiple women married to doctors, married to finance guys. So just caught the medical establishment off guard too. But you know, they're busy with shit. I mean, she's delivering babies, right? Other people are treating cancer. I blame this on the federal government and the state government for not bringing it to their attention.
You Mark, know? I was supposed to go on a trip in February, just a little weekend getaway that I had to cancel because my toe was – I had essentially broken my toe. But I had to cancel, and I called them. But before I called them to cancel – and this is a resort, okay, a well-known resort – I said, are you guys, and this was mid to late February, I would say third week in February. I said to them, are you guys taking any special precautions for what's going on here with this virus? And the woman on the phone didn't even know what I was talking about.
Yeah, people didn't know.
She didn't even know what I was talking about.
I mean, I was even posting back then. I was looking like on Twitter, like the top 20 things. It was nowhere. On Drudge Report, you know, which I love. You know, Drudge, you know, typically has what, like three columns with 20 stories a column. You were lucky if you found one coronavirus mention. And this was while it was already going nuts in China. People were just, they completely fell down on the job. And meanwhile, by the way, a headline just hit here. I guess this is a Dow Jones headline. It says, coronavirus surges in some Asian countries that had been lightly hit.
Yeah, in other Singapore, words, right?
Well, Singapore was one, right? I don't know where else. I didn't see
the
story.
I saw Singapore posted ugly numbers today.
Yeah. So, people think this is going to be over and that's it. No, you open up, we're going to get additional waves of it, you know? So that's why I'm saying this economy is going to be horrible. And, you know, NASDAQ is rallying big now. Maybe it's on the Gilead news or Gilead. Maybe people think there's a cure. But, you know, this is an IV drug that you have to be hospitalized to get,
right.
And it's got nasty fucking side effects, you know, like, you know, it's stomach stuff. I think there was some kidney stuff or something, you know, it has all kinds of stuff. So you don't want this unless you're really fucking sick. So I don't see if people understand that, maybe they don't, you know, I don't see people saying, oh yeah, let's go to the football game or the nightclub this Saturday because if I get the coronavirus, you know, I'll just get some of that drug from Gilead. No, you're going to be hospitalized and get this IV thing, and it's a nasty situation. So
I said a couple of days ago on a Periscope that, you know, look, if we're looking forward, the next interesting piece of data I think that we're going to get that's going to surprise people, we're going to have that next, like, aha fucking moment, is when we can start widespread ubiquitous antibody testing. And I think we're going to find out that this thing ran its course in the United States much earlier than people thought that it did. Look, if China's disclosed patient zero in mid-November, which is the earliest date I could find on mainstream media of there being a patient zero in China, whether he's in a lab or whether he's in the seafood market, doesn't matter. And then, of course, by the way, China demolishes the seafood market. You know, like, it's all about fucking optics, right? We knocked it down. The problem solved. It's like, are you fucking kidding?
Well, not seafood. Well, seafood market. Right, right. What do they call it? A live...
An open market, but a live...
wet market.
Wet market, right. Market.
Yeah.
But the point of the matter is... I can't remember what the fuck I was saying. I don't remember what I was saying. What was I saying?
The cover up or whatever. And you said the patient
if
zero
patient
was November,
zero... If they say patient zero was in November...
Yeah.
Let's just say it was October 31st, just for shits and giggles, okay? Yeah. How many flights per day left to and from Wuhan to other places domestically in China and then worldwide? There's a chance that the fever, the cough, whatever you had in November, December, January, was this running its course already? And I think when we get that antibody testing, it's going to be very interesting because we're going to find out exactly how many millions of people have this.
Yeah, Yeah, there were 6 million people who were out of the area already when they locked it down. I think I said that earlier, something like 6 million. Right. So, you know, it's anyway, look, we're beating a dead horse here. Obviously, every level of our government fucked up, federal, state, and local, at least in New York here, and probably everywhere, because I didn't hear about any local government that said, oh, yeah, this is coming. We just got, you know, a million N95s to protect, you know, our people. So it is what it is. So now, you know, there's not a lot to do at this point. I'm just saying that this is not going away so fast, and we're going to have a really horrible economy until there's a vaccine that's readily available. And only then will the economy, you know, be less than horrible, but there's going to be a long delay before people are starting businesses and hiring and whatever, you know?
How do you try to handicap what the market will do in this completely unprecedented situation?
You know, we're full circle right to the beginning of this conversation, which is how do you invest in a rigged market when you're not sure that in the middle of a depression, when you're not sure that the rigging is going to be enough to overcome the fundamental horribleness out there.
Right.
You know, I'm surprised at this move, especially the NASDAQ move. And even tonight it's up another, 2% after hours here, actually almost, you know, I'm surprised by this because I just thought we would sort of be in this trading range between the previous highs and the previous lows because we'd have this tug of war, right, between money printing and reality. But, you know, clearly we're you know, at least today we're breaking out to the upside. Look, I mean, if you look at a chart of QQQ, there was a gap down from 229.32. If you're looking at a daily candlestick chart, that was February 21. That's when it gapped down, you know, the next day. Maybe it's going to try to fill that gap and then crash again. I don't know. I can't see new highs with an economy this bad, which is going to be this bad for so long. But, you know, maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, and you said it best. I thought the same thing, that it was going to be a tug of war between reality and the Fed's reality. But I think it's just sad. State Street, I saw, had an ad out today. It said, the Fed's buying ETFs. You know, click here to find out which ones. In other words, we want to. That's their investing secret. They want.
I saw that. Yeah,
they want to sell you research. Right. Yeah. Like, how fucking terrible is that? Especially when everything that the Fed's buying is bags of shit that have been lit on fire, essentially, in the financial world.
It's horrible. Look, I don't blame State Street. Their business is to make people money. Just the fact that we're in a situation where people are doing an ETF gaming, what kind of garbage the Fed is going to buy, you know? I mean, look, the people out there listening, I suspect that we are going to take out the lows and go lower as this stock market realizes how bad things are going to be for a while. But, you know, saying that, it's definitely frustrating now, you know, to have not only, you know, it's one thing if I were hedged and just flat and not making losing money, but to drip away losing money because, the hedge is outperforming you know what I'm saying. So, you know, I would just be really careful chasing this and buying stocks unless you think that this market can defy the real economy like for years. I mean, all these past years when, you know, we had a bubble and everything, at least you had positive GDP in the economy and things weren't horrible. It was just a valuation bubble and a debt bubble. But now things are genuinely horrible, you know?
Yeah, did you see this story about Kimball Musk and his employees' emergency fund?
Such a douchebag. And of course, did we talk about the ventilator thing? We did talk about
that.
Yes,
we did.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a disgusting family. I mean, maybe the sister isn't. I don't know anything about her. She keeps a low profile. I forget her. Tosca or something. You know, maybe she's okay. I don't want to say anything bad about her. I will say something bad about the mother because when you raise, you know, two vile – you know, sociopaths like that, then, you know, then there's something wrong with you, you know, or maybe it's the father. I don't know. So it's a vile family. I'll give the sister
they
a break.
They had a rough, I think Elon had a rough upbringing. I'm not making excuses for him. I think the dad was,
You ever think it's the other way around and maybe he deserved all that roughness because he was just
a sociopath
scumbag,
maybe.
You know? I mean,
let me explain something to you, okay? Kimball Musk has these employees, they pay into this emergency fund, and then the mother of all emergencies hits, and people are trying to get access to this money that they paid into. Waiters and waitresses who make fuck all donating $2 a paycheck in hopes that there would be some insurance there in a situation, and then to turn around and take that away from you when your brother's worth $30 billion. And by the way, I don't know what Kimball's worth, but it's more than me. You know, Kimball's probably worth a couple billion dollars too. I mean, he's got a bunch of stock. Just by judging from their email exchange between him and Elon, it doesn't even seem like Elon likes him. But the point of the matter is, you know, hey, pay your employees the fucking $400 a person or whatever it was that they paid into this emergency fund for. Like, that is an awful story. That was, I couldn't believe that story when I read it. And the fact that we haven't heard anything subsequent to that, like, oh, we're going to make our employees whole, is baffling.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but that's the Musk family. So, you know, it's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah.
From a, I'm sorry, are you busy? Are you doing other work? I can hear you typing.
No, I'm not. Well, yes, I was, but I'm listening to you.
Well, then, no, that's okay. I don't want to keep you if you don't want to be here.
No, no, I do want to be here. I apologize. That was really rude of me. So I'm just going to type one more word here. Okay. All right, now I'm done.
Well, I don't need an apology. I don't give a shit. I was just typing something a minute ago, too.
No, it's just, you know what? Somebody's, all right, so what happened was somebody just hit me up here on this tweet deck and said, the reaction in Guild is ridiculous, but the reaction in the overall market should be even bigger than it is. If this drug is effective in treating the sickest of the sick, that's a game changer. What I was saying to this guy is what I said here earlier, which is it's not a game changer if it has nasty side effects, which it does, and you can only get it on a 5 to 10 day IV drip in the hospital, and it only saves 2/3 of the people who wouldn't otherwise recover.
Right.
It's like, take your chances with that. You know, it would be one thing if, like, you know, it would be one thing if, oh, if I nail this chick and I get the clap, so what? I get a thing of pills and I take 2 pills a day and it goes away. But this is not like that, you know? So
what are you long and what are you short going forward? I mean, what do you project for Tesla for the next quarter?
I have no fucking idea. There's too many games they play with earnings that let them basically fraud up a couple hundred million a quarter, specifically in the warranty reserve stuff. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe for Q1 they made 100 million or lost 100 million just based on their nonsense, or lost 200 million. They should lose a huge amount of money in Q2. But, you know, who knows what kind of games they'll play with that? Maybe it'll try to recognize some of this quote-unquote full self-driving revenue, which, of course, they don't have it, but he's talking about rolling out this thing. You know, what's his name? Electric had this article. It's going to be like super cautious beta or whatever they called it, where you're going to be able to go hands-free through traffic lights and intersections in cities. I mean, Musk is just putting this shit out on the road, public roads. Some woman with her kids is in a minivan, you know, in the intersection. And he's putting it out there. He doesn't give a shit. And the NHTSA is so somehow or other bought and paid for. Maybe politicians are pressuring it or whatever.
What has been the deal with them just not doing anything?
No idea. No, I have no idea.
You want to talk about your all-time failures to govern? And like you said, there's people that are focused only on this, right? With the virus. The NHTSA's sole responsibility as an agency is to prevent cars from killing people, and Teslas are accelerating on their own and driving people through the front windows of bagel shops across the United States, and they're not doing anything.
Well, not only that, but the sudden acceleration is one issue, and of course the so-called autopilot is another issue, but the NTSB, the National Transportation Safety Board, which are non-political, you know, scientists, essentially transportation scientists, they've studied this thing. They gave a whole bunch of recommendations to NHTSA as to basically you should ban this unless there's much better driver monitoring and doesn't let you go free and a different name for it, et cetera, et cetera. And the NHT, they even said it. They held a press conference a couple months ago. The NHTSA said, no, we're just not going to do that. I don't know. You know, I don't know. I mean, there's something going on there and just nobody gives a shit. And of course, Musk is now worming himself apparently into the good graces of Trump because, you know, he's on Trump's he's one of the industrialists on a quote unquote committee to reopen the country or whatever. He's so He's part of that. He's part of, there's like all these CEOs of real companies, and then there's Musk, you know, real business, and he's on there. And, you know, Eric Trump today tweeted commiserating with Musk because Musk said his CNN screwed him over because they essentially caught him. Or they actually didn't even catch him. They repeated the story that the Sacramento paper, I guess, the B, you know, scooped about the ventilator bullshit. And so now Eric Trump is like, you know, good job, Elon, or something, you know,
Eric Trump reminds me of the guy that could, like, get rich and, like, drive through South Beach in the Lamborghini, you know, like the $500,000 car, and like still not get laid because he gives off this air of just like general. I don't know what it is.
Oh yeah,
like, you know,
no,
like, just pathetic.
Isn't he married to some hot chick?
I mean, yeah, he's married. That's not the point I'm trying to make. I'm trying to build a picture of how I view Eric Trump. Just say as a. I don't know. I just never liked him. Even Don Jr., when Don Jr. was on The View a couple of months ago, I thought he did a pretty good job. I was like, okay. Like, for the most part, dude was pretty much, like, in the shadow of his father. And, like, I didn't really care for either one of them, especially because Don Jr. goes down to Africa and, you know, shoots elephants in the face. It takes a real big dick to do that, right? But, and you can say what you want about hunting. I'm all right with hunting. But,
I would,
you know,
say
don't
he
go
is,
down there and kill fucking.
I would say he is a big dick for doing that, shooting elephants in the face. Fucking fight the elephant hand to hand combat if you're so smart.
Yeah, exactly. And then take a photo of it and show it off to the world. Like,
I mean,
look,
elephants are really smart creatures, and I think anybody who hunts them is a fucking asshole. But anyway, go ahead.
I agree. Well, I hope one day he's down there and an elephant just whips his dick right at him and knocks him unconscious with it.
But, wait, what was that? That was some comedy routine or something, right? With that happening.
Soon to be, hopefully. But
No, there was something about that.
I never took to Eric Trump as a point.
It was the Larry David show, one of the Curb Your Enthusiasm episodes when this person had an implant and it would swing it around and knock stuff away. But wait, but who's the hunter? It's Don Jr., right?
I think so, yeah. I think Don Jr. was
Eric.
The guy down there. Yeah,
not Eric. So anyway, but Eric, you know, Eric does apparently...
How small does your penis have to be for you to go out hunting around here and shoot a couple of turkeys and some deer and then think, like, this isn't good enough? Like, I need to shoot a fucking rhinoceros, you know? I'm going to get a lot of shit for this, too. People tweet at me, they're like, well, they keep the animal population in check. They do a good service. Those animals were on their deathbed anyway. It helps support the economies of Africa. All right. I get it. But really, you got to fly to Africa. This is like, remember when Dick Cheney,
you know what?
When Dick Cheney shot his friend when they were on a hunting trip? They weren't even hunting on feet. They were like driving around in a Jeep shooting things.
That's supporting the economies of Africa or supporting the wildlife. I mean, that's bullshit. I mean, and so instead of paying, you know, $30,000 for the right to shoot an elephant, just give them the $30,000 and let the elephant live. You know, what's the difference? You know, you don't kill the elephants and spend the same money. You know, that's why it's the whole sick
thing. Yeah, and the corrupt guy driving out into the jungle doesn't take his 20% off the top.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Just make it, you know, this goes back to the Democrats with taxes. Because everybody's got to pay their fair share. You know, what's the matter? People don't want to pay their fair share. It's like, yo, Elizabeth Warren, when's the last time you cut a fucking check to the Treasury for $5 million for no reason at all? Because you just want to help, you know?
Yeah, well, now she's trying to worm her way into the vice presidential slot. Did you see that today?
I'd rather have her than fucking Kamala Harris. I'll tell you that. I can't do it with Kamala Harris. I mean, I don't really want either of them. But I think, as I was talking to Carson Block about this, whoever the VP is, I mean, could very well wind up as the president.
Yeah, well, no kidding. With Biden? You know,
yeah.
I would say, you know, if he makes it to the inauguration day, it'll be a miracle. By the way, what happens if the guy wins the election and then he kicks off before the inauguration? Is the vice president the president? How does that work?
I don't know. I would assume that's what would happen.
But you have to have another election. I shouldn't say kicks off.
Tell you what, a lot of people are going to be fucking Googling it over the next couple of months.
Yeah. I mean, by the way, I mean, what an embarrassment that guy is for the party that, I mean, really, it's going to be pretty entertaining to see those debates between those two guys.
Trump's going to destroy him in the debates, because you can say what you want about Trump and whether or not he, you know, is thoughtful or whether or not he, you know, thinks critically. And you could argue that he doesn't and he's not thoughtful. But the one thing you can say about him is he has a routine just by rote from, you know, by nature of being a public speaker and a businessman. He's got a fucking routine, and he's, whether you like him or not, he's got fucking stamina. He's 70 years old. He sleeps like 5 hours a night. He gets up and he fucking goes every day. And then he takes press conferences and he takes an hour and a half worth of questions after him. And I'm like, holy shit. And that's after he spends the day doing shit. And yes, I know you're the president and that's what you have to do. But I mean, that, in terms of having the stamina, like he said, Hillary Clinton doesn't have the stamina.
No, it is amazing. And the thing is, like, for all the shit the press gives him, he's by far the most accessible president ever in my lifetime. I mean, he goes out there and just wings these two-hour press conferences.
Oh, yeah.
In this case, every day. You know, whereas in the past, Obama would, like, schedule a press conference once every 3 months or whatever. I mean, this guy just, he just loves it. He loves mixing it up with those guys, you know?
And so there's nothing that he won't comment on, regardless of whether or not he knows what the fuck he's talking about, which serves him well in a debate, because if they ask him about something he doesn't know, like, you know, Mr. Trump, what do you think about nuclear power? It's the same fucking routine. Nuclear, we got to do nuclear. We got to do it very strongly. We got to do it very powerfully. Okay? It's going to save us a lot of money. Nobody knows nuclear better than me. You know? And it's like, you know, the guy has no fucking idea what he's talking about. But on a debate stage, that's what you want. A guy that is
the interesting question with the debate is, if he gets up there and destroys Biden, who is clearly sort of feeble in a way, you know, I don't think anybody will vote for Biden out of empathy if Trump destroys him and makes him look feeble, but people may just stay home from the polls because they'll be like, oh, Trump's being mean to that feeble old man. I wonder if by him destroying Biden the way he normally would destroy people, basically, you know, on personality, so to speak, if he'll wind up hurting himself because, or maybe he can't at this point. Maybe people know what he is and that's what they expect. And, you know, I don't know. I don't have an answer.
Biden doesn't even know what year it is. He's an older guy. You can stay sharp or you cannot stay sharp. And as my mom says, you know, I was talking to my mother about this a couple days ago. I said, I can't believe they're running this fucking guy. And my mom goes, well, you know, the problem is, it was his turn. It's the boys' club, and it was his turn. And she's fucking right. She's 100% right. You know, people think, well, he's paid his dues. You know, he's done this, done that. He's been around since the 70s. Nobody with a fucking sack in the DNC is going to stand up and say, hey, you're fucking incompetent because you can't put a sentence together and you don't know which way is up or down. You know, you can't hear the fucking dinner bell when people ring it at night. You can't see shit. Like, you're out there. That dude should be on a couch with a blanket, sipping a fucking thing of brandy and retired. And it's, and I'm not trying to make fun of him, and I'm not trying to, you know, he served the country as a politician for 20, 30, 40 years, whatever. We appreciate all that. But he is not, he's not in the prime of his life right now, which is where you got to be if you want to run for president of the United States.
But meanwhile, somehow he beat everyone, right? And it's true that and Trump actually says this because he makes a play for Bernie's voters when Trump says, oh, you know, if Warren had pulled out earlier, then Bernie would have won those primaries because, you know, she split that, you know, he doesn't say it, but she split the, you know, the left wing idiot commie vote with him. But he did win. I mean, he won fair and square, you know. I mean,
that we know of.
Well, assuming they counted the ballots right. I mean, he did beat all those other people. Now, he won maybe as a compromise candidate. People were like, oh, you know, we can't win the general with Bernie or even with Warren. Maybe that's what happened. I don't know, but he did win.
It took Barack Obama 6 months to endorse him.
yeah, well, Obama probably knows, right?
He finally came out like 2 days ago and begrudgingly endorsed him.
I mean, look, I mean, Buttigieg was a moderate candidate. That woman, what's her name, Kohlblocker or whatever. I mean, there were other moderate candidates. Right.
Kohlblocker.
Whatever her name is. There were other moderate...
Mark Spiegel, in tune with the politics of today.
I honestly couldn't give a flying fuck, you know, with that stuff. I'm like, okay, let's see, show me who wins, and then I'll figure out what the hell to do. Or, you know, who's going to win. But anyway, the point is, he did beat other moderate candidates that the party could have gotten behind. And,
right.
And for whatever reason, he beat them, so...
Buttigieg had a chance.
He did, and then he
had a chance.
He faded.
I think he's well spoken. I thought he was relatively honest. Look, policy wise, I didn't necessarily agree with him on everything, but in terms of having a chance to dethrone Trump, I mean, that's what you want. You want a little smart, you know, kind of well put together, gay guy, progressive, but also moderate.
That hurt him. Supposedly, that hurt him. They said that among the African American voters in South Carolina, that he had low support for being gay. Now, I don't know anything about this, but I read that in a lot of polling places, and that was sort of the key swing vote. Now, I don't know why that is. I mean, you know, if you've suffered from, you know, prejudice your whole life, you would think you would hopefully not be prejudiced against somebody over that. But that's what they said in the polling numbers, that his support was low because of that. So I guess that's how he didn't win Carolina, and that's how he wasn't going to win the nomination. And plus, people said he was too young. You know, they said he didn't have enough experience. But Biden's too old. I'll take a smart young guy over an old senile guy any day, right?
Right. So.
Anyway.
All right. Well, anything else you want to cover, Mr. Spiegel, before we call it an evening? I'll let you get back to typing to other people that you find more interesting than me on my podcast.
Nobody's more... Listen, I know
you couldn't even say it. You were going to say nobody's more interesting than you, and you fucking laughed because you know it's bullshit.
The reason I laughed, I was going to say nobody's more interesting than you. I would have said that, but the reason I laughed is I noticed as we were having this conversation in my tweet deck, stuff is popping up from you. So here's one. So I mean, who the fuck are you? Here's one. Oh, you are the host of the show. Here's one. Here's one. Bye bye, AYTU, Chinese coronavirus drug being. Well, that was 13 minutes ago, probably right while I was.
How do you know I didn't schedule that on TweetDeck, though, to go out?
Yeah, right.
How do you know I didn't schedule
it? I don't know how to do that. Can you do that? I don't know if you can even do it.
Yeah, but what the hell's the point of using TweetDeck?
You mean to not know how to schedule? The reason I use TweetDeck is. I can have three columns at once with different stuff.
Oh, okay. Is he like
and plus it streams continually. I mean, if you just have your Twitter feed in your browser, does that stream?
It used to. It doesn't anymore.
Yeah. So TweetDeck is a fantastic tool. I mean, you know, obviously the fact that you can't edit a tweet, let's say within 60 seconds of putting it up, is just completely absurd. What's the point of that?
They should get it 30. So, well, you know what? They figure it's so short, you can just delete it and make a new one.
Yeah. But, you know, so I don't know. It's just that, whatever. You know, this whole thing with, you know how I feel about Jack anyway. So, and by the way, you know, now that, I mean, when are they going to put Zero Hedge back on? You know, the fact that Zero Hedge was talked, Musk, who's Jack's a-hole buddy, tweeted all kinds of false stuff about COVID-19, and nothing happens to him. And Zero Hedge tweets that it came, which turns out to probably be right, that it came from a Chinese lab. Now, they claim that they were banned for...
platform manipulation, they said, or something different.
Well, but I thought what they claimed was that it was because they doxed, you know, the personal info for the Chinese research scientist, where they said something in that,
right.
You know, the article. It was like, oh, well... You know, if you have a problem with them, reach out to this guy, and they put it there. But the thing is, they pulled that off the public website, supposedly, right? It was not; they didn't dox anybody. That was like on the website for the Wuhan lab or whatever.
Oh, yeah, it was. They just took the guy's information that was out there already.
Yeah, so, I mean, they should be allowed back on. They were, you know, there are other guys who, you know, I still read their – I read all their stuff, or I see all their headlines in my RSS feed, you know, and then there was a bot that was retweeting their stuff, but I haven't seen it lately. Like maybe that got cracked down on, you know. So if there are other guys.
There's a couple of them still.
I mean, there's other guys who are good on the headlines and are pretty funny. The FX Hedge guy, you know, nails the headlines pretty quick, and he's really funny. And
he is, yeah. And he was on top of the coronavirus to begin with. That's FX Hedgers.
Yeah. He's good. Although, you know, he's like me. He's been, you know, overly bearish through this rally, but not his fault. It's just that's the way a thinking person might be. And then the Walter Bloomberg guy is good. He puts the Bloomberg headlines up there because there's no way I'm paying. You know, I have Dow Jones and stuff. I'm not paying $30,000 a year for a Bloomberg wire where half their stuff is garbage anyway, you know. So he's good at those headlines. So, all right.
Are you fully stocked with liquor and beer at the house?
You know, I'm not that big a drinker. I'm stocked with beer. You know, every couple of days I'll have a couple of beers, and that's about it. We have a full bar here of all kinds of booze that neither one of us has touched. I mean, you know,
what do you drink when you're drinking beer?
My girlfriend drinks wine or champagne. You know, I'm really flexible on beer. Right now I've got I was looking for a Belgian white, and they didn't have my favorite, which is Allagash. So I actually got Blue Moon, which is actually a great beer, even though it's owned, I think, by Anheuser-Busch.
Blue Moon's disgusting.
What, you don't like it? And then there's do you like Belgian whites?
Yes, I do. I like Allagash.
Yeah, I find them sort of similar. And then I bought
Hoegaarden. Growing up as a fucking, not growing up, but over the last 15 years being a bartender and turning into somewhat of a beer snob.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of mainstream beers, Hoegaarden is one that I'll drink. I like Hoegaarden.
Yeah, Hoegaarden's good. Hoegaarden's good. And then I bought, it's actually very good, Brooklyn Brown Ale. Have you had that one?
Yeah, I don't really like it, but I don't drink a lot of ales. I don't like very malt-forward beers. I don't know, just not my style. It's like Yards Brawler is a great beer if you're an ale person, but to me, that's disgusting. I don't want my beer to taste like a loaf of bread.
Well, but Brooklyn Brown Ale is not a heavy, you know, kind of beer. I mean, what are your favorite beers?
I like beer with some kind of hop presence, unless it's like a Belgian or it's a Pilsner. I like really the Philadelphia national anthem of beers is Yards Philadelphia Pale Ale. It is an incredible Philadelphia brewery. It's a wonderful success story. The guy that owns it, Tom Kehoe, is a wonderful human being. The beer is perfect. It's a beautiful mix between like an IPA and a pale ale, I think. It's just a wonderful, wonderful. It's one of the best beers and one of the most drinkable beers I've ever had in my life. It really all depends on what style. I mean, if you name a style, I also like really crisp, traditional style Pilsners. So I like to drink like in the summer, especially too. My favorite is probably Victory Prima Pils is one of the best Pilsner beers I've ever had. I like all the, you know, the German Pilsners. I'll drink them. I just don't like really malty beers. I don't drink like a lot of Oktoberfest beers, but anything else I can pretty much handle. I like stouts. I like IPAs. I like pale ales. I like lagers, you know, pretty much everything else. I don't drink like Leinenkugel. I don't drink Blue Moon, those kinds of, you know, anything that they advertise by, you can put an orange in it. I'm not interested in.
Well, people do that with, maybe they put lemon in, with some of the other ones. What's that? It's an inexpensive Pennsylvania beer that I haven't had in a while, but it's
Yingling.
A great Yingling. That's a great beer.
Yingling is, if you want to take it outside of Philadelphia and do the national anthem of beers of the state, Yingling Lager is the beer of Philadelphia and really the beer of Pennsylvania and really the beer of the working man. It's cheap. It's fucking good. It's good enough. And
but it's good. It's like it's to me. It's better than the other. I mean, not that I've had them in years, but it's better than the other, you know, inexpensive, you know, better than Miller or Bud or whatever. I mean,
oh, God, yeah, by far.
Yeah.
It doesn't taste like much, but it's enough.
Right. You know, it's light, but it's good drinking beer. So anyway, so that's what I got. I got the one you don't like, the Blue Moon. Well, I got two you don't like right now. And I got the, the Brooklyn, you know, Brooklyn Brown Ale. So, yeah, and I do actually. I will buy an October. The only thing I don't really like are IPAs, which is funny because that's one you like. You and I would never have to, you know, when this thing is really
split up a variety case.
Well, no,
you could take the ales and the fucking.
No, when this thing really all falls apart and we're sitting in a cabin somewhere with our gold and our shotguns, we'll never have to fight over the, you know, over the last two cases of beer. You'll have the IPA or the pale ale, and I'll have the, you know, the Belgian white.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So, what do you have in the liquor department at the Spiegel House?
We've got everything and touch none of it. You know, my girlfriend loves wine, so you know she'll drink red wine or sometimes champagne. We have a whole
I like champagne
full of reds, and then we have a thing full of whites that just never get touched because you know I don't drink a lot of wine. I'd rather drink beer. You know
what's a great buy for $13, man, is the Martini and Rosti Asti Spumante. It's just fantastic.
That's been around since. I remember
1870, I think.
I remember when I was a kid. I think Burt Bacharach used to, and Angie Dickinson when they were married to each other. I don't know who either of those people are. Used to do TV commercials for Martini and Rossi. I'm pretty sure. So, yeah, and in fact, Martini, the family, billionaire European family. I think some of them are still around. They probably still own it. And like Count Martini was like an avid racing car sportsman, and he used to like sponsor cars at Le Mans and stuff. I don't know if he used to race himself.
Oh,
but
yeah,
they're like a really, that family's a really big deal in Europe. They probably still are if they still own the brand.
And
but
they make that fucking sparkling wine the exact same way, man. With the
isn't it kind of sweet though? Isn't
it's
it like
very sweet? Yeah, but it's made from Moscato Bianco grapes. It's made to be sweet, so that's like a traditional kind of way of making it. And they just haven't changed it. So in my taste, I don't even like sweet sparkling wines. Like I don't drink rosé. I don't like fucking dessert wines. Any of that shit. I like dry stuff. But I don't know.
You know what's funny? When I was up in college, I took a wine tasting course. It was like I don't know, like a 10-week course, several times a week, tastings, all that. And then I've read all kinds of books about wine after that, and I have absorbed none of it.
What the fuck were you doing in college that you took a 10-week wine? You know what I was doing? Like, I was drinking natural ice by the case and then smashing the fucking cans on my forehead.
You
were taking a wine tasting course? Where'd you go, Harvard?
No, it was up in Ithaca, and it was the last semester of my senior year. And Ithaca, actually the Finger Lakes, had developed a real wine industry, which it still has. And the guy who taught this course was like this famous expert on it. But my point is that I retained none of it, you know? And since then, I have a cousin who wrote a pretty decent selling book about, you know, your guide to wine. And I bought her book and I promised to read it. I just retained none of it. And I'm like, okay, now let me go have a beer because, I mean, I can tell a good wine from a bad one, but I couldn't tell you anything about grapes, any of that stuff. I just don't remember it, you know?
There is an awesome series to anybody, and I tried to get this fucking dude on the podcast, but he won't return my emails, so whatever. But there's an awesome series on YouTube by a guy named Patrick Capiello. It's called Tasting Notes, and he used to, I think, do videos for Playboy, actually, or the Playboy channel, and he did videos about he's one of the best wine sommeliers in the world. And he grades boxed wines, cheap vodkas, cheap beers. And it's interesting to hear this. Like, and he's a young guy. He's a young, hip guy with tattoos.
How can some guy on YouTube consider himself too big to reply to your email?
I don't know. Maybe he's busy. I don't know. Man, he runs a restaurant. He owned Rebel Restaurant in New York City. And then I don't know what he has.
He should at least reply and say, listen, I'd love to do this, but I'm really busy.
I know. His videos are fucking awesome. And I would love – I could listen to the guy talk about booze.
Is he like a
day.
Big star on YouTube? Like how many?
No, I mean he's got like a couple hundred thousand hits, but he was Wine Spectator Sommelier of the Year a couple years ago. He's a young guy. I mean he's like probably like early 40s. You know, reminds me of Dan Potthast, the ska musician, a little bit. He's got like Coke bottle glasses. He just seems like a normal like dude, and I love his videos. But he didn't respond to my email. So
well,
Ithaca has a brewing company, you know.
Yes, they do. Yeah, I think I've had their Ithaca Pale Ale or something, right? Is there?
Yeah, they make one of my favorite IPAs, which is the Flower Power IPA.
That's right, Flower Power. Right. Yeah. No, I've had stuff. They didn't have that when I was up there, but it was a big wine thing. But anyway, the point is that you know I like a nice glass of wine, but I just rather have a beer. Even once a year, if we go out to a super fancy restaurant, you know, I always order off the beer menu. They'll have interesting. You know, some little thing from Alsace or whatever, and I'll have that rather than wine. Plus, it's cheaper, which is always good.
Dow futures are up 700 points.
Well, I'm looking the S&P. I'm looking at the Qs here rather than the futures, and the Qs are now in the high 216s. They were well into the 218s about a minute ago.
Look at Tesla, up 20, up making new highs, just tacking billions more in market cap on after
it's
hours.
It's mind-boggling.
For fucking no reason.
I'm so glad.
Buying 50 shares somewhere.
I'm so glad I own a relatively small amount. But it's not 50 shares. I mean, this thing trades like 500,000 shares after hours.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who, I mean, people say, well, it's, you know, getting, somebody's juicing it up. I have no idea, man. I mean, one day we'll learn. I'm looking here. So this is traded after hours today, like close to 500,000 shares so far, right? And by the way, it's only, as you and I are talking, it's only 6 minutes after six. There's two more hours to go.
Yeah,
so,
right, exactly. Yeah, it could be 1,000 by the fucking close. Who knows?
Yeah, so, you know, listen, as I said, I'm glad I can watch that more with amusement than anything else at this point. You know, at some point I'll upsize it again, but the problem is every time you think the world will realize, A, what a non-viable business it is, and B, what a scumbag Musk is, you know, the stock takes a dive and then it bounces back. It's like a vampire stock, you know? It's just got so many lives. It's like, it's crazy, you know?
Yeah, let's get together when this quarantine's over and get drunk. I regret that we didn't have a drink when we saw each other in Vegas.
Yeah, just like I was exhausted and then you were exhausted and yeah, no, that was fun. And God knows when either of us will ever go back to Vegas again. You know?
I know. I was thinking about that.
Yeah, I don't want to get the coronavirus just from, you know, sitting at a blackjack table. I don't gamble anyway. I have no interest in that anymore.
You might have already had it. That's how people need to start thinking.
You know, it's possible. When there's a test out, I'll check. I mean, there are a lot of people who have this, you know, asymptomatically. So if I'm lucky, I did. But then again, you know, if you've had it asymptomatically, like a really light case, a lot of people are saying you might not have developed enough immunity to avoid getting
that's
a nasty
true. Yeah, they're
case
not finding,
the next time.
They're only finding antibodies in like 60% of people or something, right?
Yeah, well, we don't know how much of that is a good or bad test, but there are real experts in this stuff who say that it's very possible that the nastier your case, the better your immunity next time.
Right.
And so if you just had this really light, that might not help you. Now, the next level of science is, well, why did this person get it really light? And maybe every time they get it, it will be really light or asymptomatic because there's some genetic thing there. I guess that's possible too. There was a really good – I heard a good podcast interview with a really famous virologist and a scientist. His name is Stanley Perlman. He's at the University of Iowa. And he's really world renowned on this stuff, and you know it was a good, and I listened to him for like an hour, and at the end of the day it was like nobody really understands this disease yet,
right.
And he knows as much as anybody because he studied the original SARS. He's an expert in SARS. He's an expert in MERS, you know, the Middle Eastern one, and he said this is just a mystery for us. We just don't know at this point. And if it's a mystery to him, it's a mystery to me. You know.
So. Isn't it fucking crazy that China stopped the trials of the Gilead drug? Now that you're seeing that this data is coming out and it's good, isn't that kind of interesting that China stopped those
Gilead
trials?
Well, look, so there's a couple of things. I mean, this data, first of all, it wasn't a controlled study. And second, two of the people did die. And of course, the issue you always have with this is, look, you know, if you look at the math, I think something like 95% of the people who are hospitalized for this wind up living.
Right.
It's some stat like that. So, you know, if you do that, and you know, obviously 99% of the people overall wind up living, right?
Right.
So, you know, if 95% of the people are going to live, even if you do nothing except give them oxygen, even if you have ventilating, then, you know, what does it mean in this sample size if I think it was – two or three people died without a control or a large, you know, it doesn't, this, you know, they came out with the news over the weekend. It was another open label thing. And I think they said like 2/3 of the people who got it, you know, lived, and some of them came off the ventilators, but you know, a lot of people wind up living with, I think it was, I don't remember what, anyway, it was like people said, yeah, this might be good or it might not. We can't tell with a control group, you know, but it's clearly not a magic bullet that like, you get an injection and you're cured.
Right.
You know? So that's why, like, this guy was tweeting at me, oh, this is a game changer, you know, COVID-19 is last year's story. it's not last year's. I mean, people might think tonight it's last year's story, but then if they realize what this drug involves and the fact that a number of people still died after they got it, it's not last year's story. It's like, am I going to go out to that restaurant because, you know, there's a 2 out of 3 chance that if I get a really bad case of this, I can check into a hospital for a week, get you know, 5 or 10 days of injections and maybe live? I don't think so, you know? So I think what I'm saying is if this soaring market after hours today is because of that, I think it's a misunderstanding of what this drug involves and what its efficacy, you know, really is. You know, like 65% efficacy is not a 98% magic bullet, you know?
Yeah, well, people think it's a cure and it's a therapeutic. I mean,
but it's a therapeutic that doesn't always work. It's not like their Hep C drug, which, as far as I know, always worked, right?
We don't have any clinical data. I mean, it's like the hydroxychloroquine. Everybody said, "Well, we should use it. We should use it." You know, it's like, "Well, we have to get some double blind, you know, controlled randomized data."
Not even the open label data didn't make sense in the context of how many people survive this anyway. Like, as I said, if you do the math, it's something like 95% of the people who check into the hospital for this, not on ventilators, because, you know, that was a much lower survival rate, but most people get cured anyway. So that malaria drug, that thing was ridiculous, you know, and it had nasty side effects. And, you know, that's not – even the French sort of backed away from it. Not that one doctor, but another French study. And that paper the guy published, they sort of retracted the paper, or they put like a warning label on it. That's just – and Trump's touting that is just the essence of stupidity. You know, Fauci was like, hey, we got to see the data. And he's right. And the data is not going to – that thing doesn't work. I mean, look, by the way, they've been using that on pretty much everybody in New York City emergency rooms, you know, for the last 3 weeks or something. And 500 bodies a day are piling up. Sounds like as if you're typing something there, but I didn't see anything show up on my Twitter feed, so that must be an email you typed.
I'm not. I picked up my coffee and then I put it down, and I think that you're hearing things in your old age.
Oh, I thought I heard some typing. So so this Gilead thing is definitely better than nothing, but it's not an easy magic. As I said an hour ago, it's not like, oh, you got the clap, here, take these pills, you'll be fine. It's not like that. You know? So I think the market is not realizing it. People are not realizing it. So.
All right, Spiegel.
It would be one thing if you got to go for 5 days in the hospital and get IV drips, or maybe 10 days. They're not sure how many days, but it's 100% cure.
Right.
Okay, fine. You know, maybe I'll live my life and take my chances, especially if I know I get it once, I'll never get it again, which
right.
We also don't know, by the way. But if it's like, well, you could get this, it could be nasty, and there's a 2/3 chance that if you get a horrible case that you won't die from it.
Right.
Whatever it is, you know, if you're in, it's a better chance than that, as I said, because 95% of the hospitalization, it's got a – this. From everything we can tell, it probably has around a 1%, you know, overall mortality rate if you include all age groups and all types and all the asymptomatic cases. It seems to be around, you know, 1%. So even if you get it, it's 99% not. And if you go to the hospital, it's 95% that you come out. But if you go on a ventilator, that's where they're talking about, you know, 75 or 80% of those people who go on a ventilator never come off.
Right.
Well, they were coming off with this drug, and it was like supposedly 60 or 65%. I didn't see on tonight's study, but they did say they lost a few patients. So, you know, we'll see. I hope it works, but it's not a magic bullet. That's all I'm saying.
Spiegel, thank you so much for coming on and taking an hour and a half of your time away from the keyboard. You are hereby unto released back onto the Twitter wild, so you can go about your business as you were prior to coming on. But thank you so much for coming on again, and hopefully let's do it again in a couple months and get caught back up. Hopefully we'll have something interesting to talk about Tesla wise too.
Yeah, anytime. It's always fun. Have a good evening, and I enjoy seeing your stuff on Twitter. Take care, man.
All right, brother. Talk to you soon. That was the one, the only Mark Spiegel dialing in. I finally got his audio to sound better too, which I'm stoked about. I mean, same guy, but just a little bit better audio. Folks, I have 6 podcasts lined up between now and the end of the month, and I'm fired up for all of them. Thank you guys so much again to my patrons, the people that keep the channel going, and I will catch up with you guys soon. Right now, I got shit to do, so I am out. Peace!